All right, everybody. So let's talk about pathogenic bacteria and give a little more insight on interpretation and the virulence of some of these pathogens. Now, we will talk about the GI map kind of in one section at a time, just like with the overview of the interpretation, how we went through these sections. We're going to go through section by section, and there'll be a different video kind of covering each section. So this section, we're going to cover the pathogenic bacteria. Even though H. pylori is a bacteria and is a pathogen, it has its own section on the GI map and therefore has its own section in context of this course. So the concept of virulence, we talked a little bit about virulence already. Virulence is basically going to be the concept of what these microorganisms can do to basically help them evade our immune system. So that's what virulence is. So biofilms, when we talk about biofilms are typically a protein or carbohydrate matrix that the microorganisms will make that basically helps prevent our immune system from doing things like putting holes in the bacteria or microorganism and killing them. So biofilms are actually a type of a virulence. Biofilms, as well as other virulence factors, can help with bacterial cellular communication, can help increase genetic expression and multiplication of the microorganism. Biofilms are also going to help with resistance to antibiotics, and they can improve the adhesion of the microorganism to our internal cells. The benefit of improving adhesion is, guess what? It makes it a lot harder for our immune system to attack that particular pathogen. So here we're looking at a pathogenic profile from the GI map, and what we see here is a positive E. coli. So what's super interesting about this is we see people with positive E. coli that typically when we have enterohemorrhagic E. coli, most people have some sort of symptoms. But sometimes we see people that have pathogens like this that don't have really much going on from a food poisoning type of perspective. They might be a little constipated, for example, but they've always been constipated. So sometimes we see that the pathogens here directly relate to symptoms, and other times they're not the most obvious symptoms that are occurring. So that's why we test. So let's go through some of these pathogens one at a time. So Campylobacter is a common cause of food poisoning. It's usually self-limiting. Occasionally, we see that it will invade epithelial space of the intestinal tract, get into our blood, causing bacteremia. Enterohemorrhagic E. coli is also food poisoning. Cramps and watery diarrhea are typical. Usually it's gone within 7 days, but like I said, sometimes we see people like this that have the presence of this microorganism and they don't remember any cramping. They don't remember any watery diarrhea. They don't remember any digestive upset. E. coli 0157 is a type of enterohemorrhagic E. coli, so similar type of symptoms. Shigella typically will cause bloody diarrhea. So it is food poisoning. Typically, it comes with bloody diarrhea, but not always. We definitely do not want to rule these things out just based upon somebody not having the classic symptoms. And then Shiga-like toxin is produced by E. coli, the enterohemorrhagic, the E. coli 0157, Shigella will all produce a Shiga-like toxin. Now, this Shiga-like toxin is a virulence factor. It can damage intestinal walls and vascular epithelial cells, such as the vasculature of the kidney. So that's part of what that toxin's going to do. Part of that damage to that vascular walls, that's one of the reasons why we'll start to see that blood in the diarrhea with Shigella in particular. Vibrio cholera is food poisoning. Certain members of the species can cause mild diarrhea or no symptoms. Other members of the species can cause extreme watery diarrhea, vomiting, hypovolemic shock, and acidosis. I remember when I was in school and we were talking about this, there was one of our teachers who was talking about a story of being on a plane and the entire plane got sick with Vibrio, and that was very traumatic, right? Can you imagine being on a plane where everybody has extreme watery diarrhea? That would be pretty intense. So it's a story to remember for sure. But there are cases where you can see Vibrio come up on lab tests, like just like with this E. coli conversation, where people just don't have these common symptoms. Yersinia, food poisoning, typically we see fever, diarrhea, right-sided abdominal pain, and then C. diff. So C. diff, the most common thing, the reason that a lot of us are thinking C. diff is typically post-antibiotic. Sometimes it's transmitted nosocomially. The big thing with C. diff is going to be the toxins. Most people are going to have toxins left over after they've been treated. And some people can be asymptomatic carriers of the toxins. So some people can say have the toxins and they're not, really affecting them. Some C. diff cannot produce its toxins due to genetically, just that microorganism won't produce the toxins. But the story I want to tell here is I had a client who came in and she had an autoimmune condition that is not typically one of the more common autoimmune conditions most of us see in our clinic. It was dermatomyositis. So basically, her skin and her muscles were being attacked, and her muscle atrophy was getting so bad that the way she was taking a shower was she would go into the shower, she would squeeze her shampoo bottle, and basically that would be exhausting to her. So then she'd have to lie down on the floor, get some energy, turn the shower back on, wash her hair, turn the shower off, rest, and she would go through her whole showering process like this. She had two little kids. She got to a point where she was not able to get down on the floor and play with them. She was in her 30s when this was happening, so she was very, very young. So basically, we did all sorts of different lab tests for her, and we had mold come up, we had SIBO come up, we had C. diff toxins A and B both come up. We did all sorts of micronutrient tests, heavy metals. So we had a lot of things that we were working through. And we were getting close to a year mark in treatment, had treated a lot of the different things. She was getting improvement of some of her symptoms, for example, like digestion was better. But the main thing that we were trying to address was like reversal of the dermatomyositis was not happening. And so she was at a point where she was really, really concerned about, disease progression, and she was talking about going to Mayo Clinic and going on more standard treatment. She was really trying to avoid that. And I basically told her, I was like, well, I was like, we, I understand where you're at. And we still have a few things that really we have not gotten to as far as the treatment and the layers. So can you give me a couple more months to see if I can get you out of this? And if not, then I'll help you with getting the information to Mayo that you need to continue some care there. So she agreed to this plan, and we right away from that point, we started treating the toxins A and B. And it was 3 weeks from starting to treat toxins A and B, and she was taking showers like normal. She was down on the floor playing with her kids, and at that 2 month mark, she was running again. She was a runner and she was running again. So I tell this story to really elicit the and show the power of working with these toxins. They really are very inflammatory. They can cause a lot of problems. And yes, all of the other things leading up to this particular patient's treatment of toxin A and B absolutely put her in a place where she was, those things needed to be treated. They were causing inflammation. But for her, the biggest turnaround really came when we got to these toxins. So important. Don't underestimate the power of working with these toxins. So the mechanism of action of the toxins of C. diff is that the colonocytes of our intestine, so the colonocytes of our colon, will consume the toxin. The toxin then causes a secretion of acid, and that lowers the cell's pH. And once the colonocyte basically has its pH lowered, then the toxins are going to then release another toxin, a more virulent toxin, the catalytic domain toxin. And the catalytic domain toxin is actually going to destroy the cytoskeleton of the colonocyte, and we get loss of polarity and death. So basically, this toxin, if it's left even after the C. diff, what it's happening is it's actually destroying DNA. intestinal tract. So this is such a big one to be working with. So here's a study that's looking at some of the potential problems with the toxins, with toxin A and B, and what they are doing in the body. And what this animal study actually found was that toxin A and B will actually bind to different receptors, and toxin B is going to actually bind a little bit more deep in the intestinal mucosa. And so that's one of the things that they're actually seeing, at least the study found on this animal study, was that toxin B did not have the ability to cause problems unless there was already intestinal damage present. But the thought from this study is that toxin A could actually be part of what is damaging the intestine and allowing toxin B to basically further cause damage. So what we're learning here is that, toxin A and B is worth, it's worse to have both of the toxins than just one of the toxins. And don't by any means, though, take that we have to have toxin A for toxin B to be pathologic. All this study was really showing, and again, this was just an animal study, is that we had to basically have some level of intestinal damage for toxin B to be a problem. So hopefully you understand some of the pathology of this. The biggest points to really take home from the pathology and pathologic bacteria section of this are going to be that most of these bacteria we're dealing with are food poisoning type of bacteria. Most of the time, they're going to cause diarrhea and typical food poisoning type of symptoms, but there are exceptions. You can find people who are having a hard time clearing the infection, and even though the infection's not causing diarrhea, it's still causing inflammation, could still be causing problems. And the other thing that we need to remember is going to be that Clostridia can secrete toxin A and B, which can cause a lot of problems, and we absolutely want to make sure we're addressing those toxins. So that's the pathology section. We'll see you in the next lesson.